Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today is December 7th, not 1941, and hopefully not a day that we'll live in.
Oh, that's right. You know what? I haven't heard one thing about that today.
I did see some, but today is the 80th anniversary of the invasion of Pearl Harbor.
I hate to say it. I think that the whole COVID thing has really just overwhelmed our senses.
Largely has. I took note of a few things that people were pointing out in various places today,
and it's worth noting.
Yeah. You know, 80 years, you know, time marches on.
I mean,
you know.
Yeah, my dad was in World War II. I mean,
same here. So let's see, what's up? I think maybe not to lead with a downer or to draw a parallel between Pearl Harbor and COVID, but I think it is worth noting that in the last few last week or two weeks, perhaps, there's been a rather noticeable increase in the COVID numbers for the city of Cambridge and just generally. I'm not going to put up any.
But our positivity rate is still well below.
Our positivity rate is actually quite low in terms of testing, and we do a lot of testing.
Yes.
In part because the universities are testing like all the time, you know.
And
that's what helps drive.
We're very lucky that we have Broad Institute that does our PCR testing, because we don't wait 48 hours. I think I've done it twice now or three times in the last year and a half, and we wait like maybe overnight.
Yeah.
So, but we're lucky in that way.
But it's been sort of alarming. There was especially when, you know, it's especially alarming when there's a little bit of a lag because of a weekend or whatever.
Yes,
and then when they do a little backfill data, and then we jumped by 90 in a single day.
But
and
it's still
thought, my Lord. I mean, we were down around 5.
I know, but who said, was it last night they said it was 36 people out of 100,000? Have been
in terms of any severe illness,
right?
There are relatively few hospitalizations, and we haven't
had,
knock wood, we haven't had a fatality in Cambridge for a good while,
right?
It's not like last year in terms of this sort of fearfulness of it all, but it's a noticeable uptick in the sewer sampling. That's actually a bit of a predictor of what's to come, has really been roaring high. And
has so, it, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked at it, but I didn't really.
It just shot up to its highest points ever today. And so I don't know what that means for us. The testing that they do on wastewater for City of Cambridge is actually a little bit better than MWRA in the region.
That's
So maybe that's sort of a positive thing. But you know, after having the number of, you know, the 7-day average of new tests being down below 10 for a while,
right?
You know, it's now at the highest it's actually ever been. You know,
is that counting the universities or not?
It does include the universities, but you can't connect them exactly, because the numbers that the universities put out also include students and affiliates who might live in Somerville and elsewhere. You know, so they're in their numbers. So you can't just sort of look at those numbers and think of them as Cambridge numbers, but a lot of them are also, that's one of the biggest contributors to the Cambridge numbers. Actually, one thing, and I think maybe it's actually worth doing here, I'm going to do a little pop over here to the wherever it says plague report. I've been trying to have a little black humor in all of this but you could kind of see here how the numbers were rising, and then just in this last week or so they just really took off.
You
can see the spiking. It's happening in the 7-day averages. Here it is, and just in the Delta period, how it's just really, really soared above, you know, where it had been kind of undulating for a little while.
People say this is really due to Delta more than anything.
We're still in the Delta phase, and we don't know yet about Omicron. By the way, one of the things that is kind of interesting is to look at by ages is that, and this was actually, spoken about by Subrine at the city council meeting last night, is that the biggest number of instances of new positive cases are actually in the very young, you know, like 0 to 5.
I know, that was alarming.
And then, you know, 6 to 19, you know, so there's been a big, big jump. And then also people who are in their 20s.
Yeah.
And then there's been increases in people in their 30s and a little bit even further on, you know, and then it kind of dies out. So this is largely a phenomenon that seems to be happening in the younger age groups.
So why do you think that is? You think because Delta maybe strikes more younger people, or it's more contagious, or what? Because I assume a lot of these people are vaccinated.
It's hard to say. Well, some of the younger people are the ones who are only now getting vaccinated. So some
if you're over 18, you could have done it a long time
ago. You could have done it, yeah. But the thing is there were big jumps in people who are under 18 who are only now getting it.
Well, that's true.
I mean, fortunately, the likelihood of actually getting seriously ill when you're in that age is actually very, very low. So in terms of like the absolute fear that some people might have about it, I don't think that's really warranted. Right. But it is really worth noting, and you know, for those of us who are, like many of us who are feeling a little bit of COVID fatigue, mm-hmm. and you know, kind of wanting it all to be done, it's just one more, you know, one more annoyance that this continues to linger in it. You know,
it affects so much. It affects, you know, the word, you know, supply chain. It affects the cost,
the viability
of
business, local businesses.
Jobs. Yes. I mean, where are all the people that used to work? That's what I want to know. I mean, was unemployment, did it go on that long that people just saved up and said, I don't need to go back to my job?
Some did. So this is basically forcing a lot of decisions. Yeah.
But we're talking about, and I guess it is it's the more maintenance jobs. It's the you know, jobs you don't necessarily need a college education for, but it's also
long distance truckers, jobs like that.
I don't think you have to be
called. Away,
right.
Yeah.
No, you're right. It's the truckers. It's the, daycare workers. It's, I mean, yes, there's salary stuff, but still, and people have raised salaries and they're still not coming back. So where are they? Right. That's all I want to know. Where are all these people?
Well, I don't know, but people are sort of coming back, and right now the unemployment, I mean, it's always a little tricky to read.
It's so weird. They say the unemployment rate's low, but yet everyone's saying they don't have any staff.
You actually have to look at the unemployment rate, because if you haven't been looking for a job, then eventually you get removed from the statistics entirely.
Good point.
That therefore the rate may look like it's quite low, but that's only because you're no longer being
counted. You're not looking. Oh, wow.
Yeah. No. So you can also access the statistics that sort of add up, you know, the current unemployed, and also the people who are just barely part-time working, and people who've given up, and then it's probably a significantly higher one, but I haven't looked at it lately. So anyway, I think it's worth noting. It's kind of the news of the last 2 years, really, but it's still with us, and it's still a relevant
topic. Oh, it's
going
to be with us, and hopefully it will get to be something like be aware of the flu. I mean, in other words, be on your guard, take precautions. I don't mind wearing a mask in the winter, even outside, because it keeps me warm. You know, I don't care. You know,
many people, including me, really, are actually starting to at least think of it more like a bad flu year, you know?
Yeah, it's not going to go away.
And I don't think it'll go away, but you know, we'll just sort of learn to live with you know, something that we'd rather not have to deal with. But
Americans aren't very good at making compromises or taking care of the greater good. Unfortunately, this country is showing its worst behavior.
I think that's really
another
true.
Story.
Yeah. So last night up at City Council, the lead item, at least during part of the regular meeting after public comment, was the COVID update. But there were at least two other significant matters that was the subject of public comment, as well as the subject of
bikes.
That's
right. Finance.
Right. It's like it's bikes and campaign finance. Exactly. You know, I think it's worth at least making a few statements about all of that. I think, you know, I mean, it's sort of like right now it's like an incendiary topic to talk about the bike lanes in North Mass Ave. There are a lot of people who have really taken sides, and I wish it didn't have to be that way.
Well, I didn't even know about that incident. That sounds awful. I can't believe someone did that.
Yeah, personally, I've learned to filter out the actions of one wacko individual, and I don't draw I don't derive any notions of patterns or general facts based on the notions of one idiot. You know, there will always be idiots. You know, so that didn't bother me all that much. I mean, I don't like the fact that people try to capitalize on it one way or another, though. But you know, the ultimate problem with the North Mass Ave was really rooted in what happened last year when, you know, when you pass an ordinance that basically removes all flexibility and basically takes the city manager's management role and the city department's role as making decisions about roads and traffic and whatever, and just basically grabs that executive authority and hands it to the city councilors in the form of an ordinance and says, you know, I'm sorry, you people can't do your job. I mean, if it was really up to the people of the Department of Public Works, at least based on my conversations with them, they would be building all bicycle infrastructure as, you know, there's those ones that are kind of grade separated things like you see on Western Avenue or what will soon be coming to River Street. And a little piece of, you see a little preview of it down by the Mass and Main project in Central Square, things like that. I don't think they particularly love the white posts, the flexi posts, and the, you know, all the sort of what they call quick build things that are mandated.
But to do that other kind of
it's more expensive and it takes more time. It's more expensive
and it takes as much room on the, I don't think that.
Well, actually, it may or may not. There are some places, like for example, in North Mass Ave, where they're actually, if you think of it as a not just curb to curb reconfiguration, mm-hmm. but even further, because in North Mass Ave, there's also the median that's there, which could add to the width and give more flexibility, and also some of the sidewalk widths are actually quite wide out there. So if you reconfigure things so that you basically shorten the sidewalks a little bit, move some of the bicycle infrastructure up there, or whatever, you might be able to make things better. One of the things that I find absolutely confusing is that there seems to be a city policy that was not part of, as far as I know, was not part of any of the cycling safety ordinance, that they do not want to consider in any serious way combined bus bike lanes.
I don't get that because it works in other places.
If you go across the border into Arlington, that's exactly what you see.
Also in parts of, I think, Boston or Watertown. It's
a lot of places, I mean, considering the frequency of buses. Frequency of buses is relatively, it's not like you have a bus every 30 seconds, right?
Exactly.
So what you're basically doing is you're designing in an empty road for half the roadway, which is kind of irritating.
I've traveled that route a couple times now in the last week or so just to see, and you know, it's just an observation, but I do feel for the businesses. I do feel all of a sudden have nothing. And
what I find interesting is there's almost like a battle of confirmation bias statistics,
you can find whatever you want.
You absolutely can find it. So, you know, so if you're part of the advocacy group that wants to, that really wants to be do things exactly what they're doing right now, you'll pull out statistics from wherever, and some of them are valid and some of them are not. One of the ones that I found particularly alarming, somebody said, well, here's your proof. And it turned out to be a statistical analysis about the relative safety of the separated cycle lanes that actually included things, you know, pathways like off-road paths, like Minuteman Bikeway. Well, of course the Minuteman Bikeway is safe. Right? But they just included it in order to up the mileage.
I saw that. I didn't quite understand what you meant, but now I see what you meant.
Yeah.
Saw that in your...
And actually it was interesting. So in that one, when it was somebody pointed out, I think I might have actually pointed out some of the comments in response to that was one of them was by a fellow named Paul Schimek, who has often raised issues. He actually used to be the president of the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition. He was actually a bike coordinator for the city of Boston. And I've been on bike rides with him.
He
actually raises some important issues about some of the misconceptions about, you know, perceived safety versus actual safety.
Well, the same thing with Craig Kelly.
And Craig Kelly understands
And people will vilify them. You know, I have a friend that, she can't stand him because he's anti-bike.
I have to say, though,
I
have a little bit of insight about this. You know, once upon a time, there was something called the Boston Area Bicycle Coalition.
Right.
And they had a mailing list, like a listserv that was, you know, was just went by the name of the Mass Bike List.
Okay.
Right. And that used to be a place where there was a lot of spirited interchange between different points of view about how to achieve bicycle safety. Mm-hmm. There were many people who were sort of on one side, or what they call vehicular cycling advocates, who basically believe, you know, they used to, remember, you see the t-shirt, you used to say same road, same rules.
Yes.
You know, basically bicyclists should be respected like any other road user. Yeah. That's almost like a completely forgotten perspective now, because it's verboten. You're not supposed to even talk about that. But the reason why I have a little bit of a personal perspective about this is that the person who started that list, eventually it was hosted in one form. And I actually said, listen, I'll move it over to a Google group. And I did, and I'm technically still the owner of that list. And what happened then is that we were asked to change the name of the Mass Bike list to the Bay State Cycling List, because the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition had wanted to take the name Mass Bike and use it pretty much exclusively for their own. And it was right around the time when they were basically purging all who disagreed.
Wow.
So that anyone who had actually did not agree with the solemnity of separated bicycle facilities was pretty much purged and pushed out. And it was not even, debate was not permitted. There was, thou shalt not talk about alternatives anymore. Wow. And and that was kind of the birth of the kind of the militancy that we've seen since then. Huh. Now, and it has carried through to this very day. I mean, honestly, even the Cambridge Bicycle Committee, which I've never been a member of, but I was part of the group that went to Alice Wolfe and lobbied to create it. You know, we marched to the mayor's office back, you know, this was like 30 years ago. But, you know, that was, any points of view, different points of view that existed with the Cambridge Bicycle Committee, it pretty much been purged clean. You know, if you're a person who had a point of view like Craig Kelly, you would probably not be allowed to serve on the Cambridge Bicycle Committee.
Forget it.
Being said, the Cambridge Bicycle Committee is actually, you know, calm and easygoing in comparison to the bike safety group that has been the strong, more militant lobbyist. Yeah. They are the ones who pushed the cycling safety ordinance. And I don't think the bicycle committee was the ones doing that.
Yeah.
It was a very politically driven, very militant kind of action. And that's what we have now. And I find it bizarre that we actually have a majority of city councilors who will not recognize the fact that this is something that was spawned out of militancy. It was not entirely about safety.
I know. You know, it's interesting. Last night's discussion, I guess there was another accident that was brought up during this discussion that happened yesterday or something. And
the accident, I think, that they were referring to was a bicyclist who rode into an Amtrak train.
No, they said it was a car.
Was it a car?
I don't know. It was yesterday.
Meeting is when this happened, actually.
Well, you're bringing up the point that it just, because there's a crash, you have to understand all sides. And then Mark McGovern, brought up Amanda Phillips, and we don't want to have another Amanda Phillips. But we all know, some of us, about the reality of how that happened and how she was somewhat at fault. And I just resent that they bring that up as sort of like this touchstone that we have to avoid when, let's look at the intricacies, right? Am I right about that? Of where she
you're right about that. Yeah.
Craig Kelly has pointed this out.
In that case, as well as a number, most other cases, really, these were avoidable tragedies.
Right. She took a shortcut and then went out in between, if she had come the right way, it wouldn't have.
But we always, if you speak about it, you get accused of blaming the victim. But almost all of these situations were avoidable. Most of the crashes as well.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of misunderstandings about where the primary, where are the greatest points of vulnerability?
Yep.
You know, and, you know, I mean, I have my own point of view. To me, it's like, I would rather not be riding in very close proximity to a vehicle that's riding a lot faster than me or is a lot bigger than me. So that's one thing. So in that sense, I'm actually receptive to the idea that something needed to be done to North Mass Ave, because it's, you know, once you leave Porter Square heading off to the Arlington Line, you might actually speed up, or you might, because there are two lanes, it makes it more, two travel lanes in the same direction is more dangerous than one, because people are maneuvering. You know?
True, but you know what? I walk a lot, and I've been, you know, on Pearl Street in Brookline, which is only one lane, and people do speed. They go over 25. They might go 30 miles an hour. That is too much. Yeah. We have to enforce more traffic.
Right. So, you know, one of the great confounding factors in all of this discussion here is that, I mean, reduct you out of absurdum.
What?
Right. Or Occam's razor. Latin. Sort of, yeah, a little bit. The truth is that if you were to completely stop all traffic.
Yeah.
Through tremendous congestion to the point where it's just impossible to move. You will eradicate all fatalities and injuries for cyclists because there'll be no movement. Okay. So that's the extreme. So really any increase in bicycle safety, in my view, is largely due to the fact that you're basically making traffic slower.
Well, because they also want people to think about alternatives in their
cars. So it's not the separation nearly so much as it is just the fact that traffic
is slowing down traffic. Well, yeah. I can sort of understand that.
Yeah,
in a way,
I see that, you know, and I see there's a good arguments for slowing down the absurdly fast traffic. I don't know that it's necessarily helpful to be making things so congested that everybody's pissed off all the time.
Because angry people can do other things too.
Well, they also can decide, I'm off of this road, and they can go hit for the side road, and they'll make a quick turn right across that protected bicycle lane too. And I think everyone, even the people who are gung-ho for separated facilities, pretty much acknowledges the fact that it is at intersections where the greatest danger exists, and it will remain that way. And most of the separation doesn't really address that. It actually sometimes can make it worse. Not always, but because you can obscure the driver. Even though they're living in fear that they're about to hit a cyclist, so they're like looking and careful or whatever.
Yeah,
they could still make a turn and then have a fast-moving cyclist coming up separated lane, and not really anticipate them, and then you can have a crash that way. So,
the other thing I was going to say, let me just say this. A lot of the public commenters were talking, you know, that are all for the bikes, and you know, I travel to these stores by bike and I buy in my local shops, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe you do, but are you discounting that people who do not live in Cambridge come to some of those places and maybe are loyal to those places and they have to park? I mean, it was almost like this mindset, well, we live in Cambridge and we can do it this way because we're local and we support our local, completely forgetting that it's beyond, there's other, you know, beyond our bound, you know, it's just
some of the people who were saying that I started to sort of scratch my head a little bit saying do they really or are they just saying it because it's on the script, because there is a script of things you're supposed to say.
I know, but this wasn't even a script. These were, you know, people that live there and then there was a woman who's probably my age, who says, I bike, I do this, I do that, and I'm all support of this, I shop at my, I'm like, good for you that you bike, but you know,
you live right there.
Okay, but
a lot depends on the nature of the destination. Right. So for example, along North Mass Ave, there's a place where if you're a woodworker and you go there to buy materials for woodworking,
you need to park and take
it is
stuff,
highly right? probable you're coming in a motor
vehicle.
You're
not doing it on a bike. I know.
If it's a cafe, sure, you come here on a bike. That's great.
Right.
But if you're going grocery shopping, some people will go grocery shopping with a bicycle with baskets and equipped and whatever. Yeah. But most people who are going grocery shopping will still go by motor vehicle. And I don't mean just most, as in 60% to 40%. I'm talking 90% to 10%.
I know. And also, there's, as Dennis Carlone, I think, did point out, I mean, there are people, there's doctor's offices, there's therapy offices.
Yes.
There's those kinds of services, and you know, people come from other places. I mean, thank goodness, otherwise those people couldn't exist. If they don't want it to be commercial, then Dennis
said flat out, I said, over time,
it's going to be all residential. Right,
the businesses will become not so viable in all, that's at least right. that's my I get that sense.
No,
I mean, there'll be some
places
will stay,
like
but
that.
Many will
that's
go
right.
away. Yeah.
Right.
You know, and
I don't know. It's just,
so anyway, it's weird. It's like competing propaganda with bad statistics everywhere, you know? So anyway, it's not a debate, if you want to even call it a debate, that I enjoy. It's there's so much bull going back and forth on it, you know, but anyway, if anybody wants to throw bricks and tacks or broken glass in bike lanes, please don't, you know,
I mean,
you're not helping, right?
That's unbelievable. Yeah.
So the other big thing that was, you know, and we'll probably carry this over
we'll have to
the
carry
next
this
half
over
hour,
we only have another minute and a half.
Yeah. But just to sort of start it off is that something that's actually been going on for forever,
many
really,
years.
But
right.
6 years is about campaign finance limits.
Right.
All
right.
That's right. And restrictions about who can donate and what limits should be and whatever.
Right.
It's been a source of a tremendous amount of contorted language amongst counselors, you know, because anything that involves their own election re-election probabilities is a pretty sensitive topic for them. You know, so anyway, I certainly have a point of view about much of this, but anyway, you know, right now we're at the point where this proposal from Dennis Carlone was passed to a second reading.
Yep.
In whatever amended form it happens to be here.
Yeah,
so in 2 weeks, presumably they're either going to vote it up or down or change it some more.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, we should definitely talk a little bit more about it because.
Yeah, we will, because it's important, because it's.
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding.
And also we can tie that in with, well, it's not related, but the election stuff and the roundtable that happened.
Definitely talk about that. Oh, and by the way, you know, I do. So this is
took it down because somebody complained.
My little souvenir,
up, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
that
anyway,
might be a souvenir. Okay, so we will see you on the next segment in a few minutes. In about, let's see, we have another couple seconds, and then we're going off. Right.
See you then on Cambridge
Inside
Out.